Welcome to Beekeeping Today Podcast, presented by Bee Culture. Beekeeping Today Podcast is your source for beekeeping news, information, and entertainment. I'm Jeff Ott.
And I'm Kim Flatham.
Hey, Jeff and Kim. Today's sponsor is Global Patties. They're a family-operated business that manufactures protein supplement patties for honeybees. It's a good time to think about honeybee nutrition. Feeding your hive's protein supplement patties will ensure that they produce strong and healthy colonies by increasing brood production and overall honey flow. Now is a great time to consider what type of patty is right for your area and your honeybees. Global offers a variety of standard patties as well as custom patties to meet your needs. No matter where you are, Global is ready to serve you out of their manufacturing plants in Airdrie, Alberta, and in Butte, Montana, or from distribution depots across the continent. Visit them today at www.globalpatties.com.
Hey, Happy New Year, Sherry. Thanks a lot for that. You know, everybody, each week we get to talk about how much we appreciate our sponsor support. They help make all of this happen and provide us the ability to expand and grow, as you'll see now that we're into 2021. With that, thanks Bee Culture Magazine for continuing their presenting sponsorship of this podcast. Bee Culture has been the magazine for American beekeeping since 1873. Subscribe to Bee Culture today, and while you're there, check out Bee Culture's Beekeeping Your First 3 Years, a quarterly magazine for beginning beekeepers. We also want to thank 2 Million Blossoms as sponsor of this episode. 2 Million Blossoms is a quarterly magazine dedicated to protecting all pollinators. Learn more in our Season 2, Episode 9 podcast with editor and our guest co-host, Kirsten Trainer, and from visiting www.2millionblossoms.com, and that is with a number 2. Hey, everybody, Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us. It's a great way to kick off 2021. It's nice to have 2020 in the rearview mirror, isn't it, Kim?
Well, you got that exactly right. It can only get better.
I'm not going to tempt fate, but I am hopeful.
that's probably a smart move, yeah. Let's just hope it doesn't get worse.
Yeah. So you've recovered from your New Year celebration?
Well, my New Year celebration was pretty, feeble, should I say? I'm getting too old for that, and B, we weren't going to go anywhere anyway. So I'm glad it's over, and I'm glad we're heading into this one with this show today.
Yeah, no, this I'm looking forward to 2021 and what we're doing here with the podcast and our umbrella company, Growing Planet Media, is pretty exciting. I have a lot of hope for 2021.
I do too. It's and you and I have been doing some planning here. We got stuff in the works that I think are going to be good this year.
Yeah. Well, first, before we get into all that. So on today's episode, we have Tom Theobald. You've known Tom for a long time, haven't you?
I have. He's out in central Colorado, and he and I hooked up not long after I started at the magazine, and we've been in touch ever since. I've been to his place a number of times, and one of the times that I was there, he showed me the topic. He showed me how he does his two queen colonies, the topic of today's show.
Two queen colonies. This is really going to be really interesting because he's one of the few people who does this, isn't he?
And he isn't doing it anymore. One of the reasons you'll see is working with honey supers on a stepladder is not something for an old man.
Oh, I can understand that. All right. Well, I look forward to that. Looking forward to talking to him here in just a little bit. So you've had your first big snowfall there in northern Ohio, haven't you?
Well, in some places it was big. Some places it was 12, 14 inches, wow. Not far from here. We had just enough to be an irritant, but not enough to be a problem. Mm-hmm. I didn't even have to put my boots on to go outside. It was, 1 or 2 inches in the driveway. That was it. North of us in the snow belt up there, they were shoveling for days. So we got lucky and missed that one. But it's cold. And, of course, cold and bees don't mix well. And you're checking the entrance for snow and trying to get the wind blocks going and everything. So it's winter.
Yep, for a couple more months. But, the bright side is the days are getting longer each day. So they are.
Good.
In December, we released a new website. I have to admit, there were some technical challenges. So we're going to have a new re-release, a new website here in a couple weeks in January. So it'll be up, and I hope encourage everybody to go out and check out our new website here. Keep an eye out and watch for that. And you're working on a new podcast with a second podcast with Jim too, right?
Yeah, Jim and I, you know, we put our heads together on a lot of things over the years, back in the day, we did the webinar, the Kim and Jim show, and we would go visit a beekeeper or someplace. We did one from New Zealand and one from France, and we kind of missed that. But we got together and we decided to do a podcast with just Jim and myself, and it's called Honeybee Obscura, which is all things honeybee. And that's what we do. We talk about honeybees and beekeeping, bees and beekeeping, and the things that beekeepers run into, and it's Jim and I sitting back and talking like we've been doing for 30 years. And it's been fun so far. We've got a few in the can. Bear, I think, Jeff, you've got them scheduled. The first one coming out January 14th.
January 14th.
Is that right?
Yeah, should be. And they're going to be a weekly podcast.
Yeah. Every Thursday morning.
Yeah, every Thursday morning.
Every Thursday morning.
And they're relatively short, right? They're 15, 20
yes,
minutes?
Short, sweet, and to the point.
Okay.
Not right, you know, even a short bike ride to work, you'll be able to tune it in.
Well, listen to between meetings or something like that.
Yep, there you go.
And get your honeybee fix. Well, great, with Honeybee Obscura with Kim and Jim. And also with Kirsten, we're working with her to help launch a new podcast for her magazine, 2 Million Blossoms, the podcast. And that will also be coming out towards the end of January, beginning of February. So watch for that as well.
Yeah, Growing Planet Medium is kind of stretching its base here a little bit.
Yeah, Growing Planet Medium is a good thing. Well, with that, let's hear from our good friends at Strong Microbial and get into our interview with Tom.
Hello, beekeepers. Your honeybees face a lot of challenges out there. Unbalanced food sources from monoculture crops, holding yards, drought, food shortages, antibiotics, pesticides, and pathogens like chalk brood. To overcome these challenges, your bees need the multiple bacteria that are in all nectars, pollens, and the environment. These bacteria aid honeybees' digestion and improve your honeybees' response and resilience to pesticides. Now you can help improve your honey colony health with a quick, easy, and safe-to-use product. Strong Microbial's Super DFM Honeybee uses naturally occurring bacteria to restore the healthy gut biome of your honeybees. Check them out today at www.strongmicrobials.com.
Hey, Tom, nice to meet you again.
Hi. Yes, I enjoyed the last time. I'm sure I'll enjoy this time as well.
I'm glad to have you back. You know, we were almost neighbors when I lived up in Berthoud, and you were down in Hygiene, right? So
yeah,
that's probably good.
Well,
good.
Niwot,
yeah.
Well, Tom, what brought this up to me today was the new version, the 42nd edition of ABC and XYZ is out this week. And I was thumbing through it, and I've got your picture in there with one of those two queen colonies. It's 11 supers tall. So I'm going to sit back, and you're going to tell me how you make that work.
Well, before you get into that, Tom, on how you made that 11 supers tall, talk, what is a two queen system and all the basics behind it?
Okay, I didn't invent the two queen system. I'm sure that it's in the literature somewhere. I perfected it as I went along. I started beekeeping in 1975. Bought 40 colonies of bees from Harlan Henderson in October of 75. The following spring, I got 25 packages. By the end of the first year, I was up to 100 colonies, and fairly shortly, I was up to 200 colonies. And I realized that was about the limit of what I wanted to do work-wise. And somewhere along the line, I stumbled upon the two-queen system. And I began to try it out. Basically, what it is, I ran a colony of bees in three deep hive bodies. That was their standard home. For most beekeepers, it's two deeps. I ran them in three. So I'd come in the spring, and I would take a three frame split, and that would go on top of the two lower deep hive bodies with a solid divider between, so that the third hive body was completely separated from the lower two, and the top hive body had an auger hole to the rear. And then I would order queens, and that top split would get a queen a day after I've split them, and that solid divider would remain until the top queen was well established, was laying well, would have two or three frames of sealed brood, ideally. Then the next step would be to come in, and the books would tell you to put in a double screen to give the hive odors a chance to mingle. And I circumvented that. I found that I didn't have to do that. The next step was I put a queen excluder over the second story, two medium depth supers, another queen excluder, the new queen in a deep hive body, and then another queen excluder and two or three honey supers. And I would let that go until the top queen had pretty much filled her hive body, and we were approaching the main honey flow, which at that time here was the second cutting of the alfalfa. So at that point, I would take it up, that whole stack down to the second story. The third story went on top of the second story. Auger hole turned to the front. And then by then, I usually would have one or two honey supers that were pretty well filled. Those would go above the third story, and they acted as a queen excluder. I didn't need queen excluders anymore. And by the time the honey flow really got underway, a colony would have three deeps and seven medium depth honey supers. That was about the extent to which I could reach. I was 6 foot two then, still am, I think, but I could crack that seven supers and take it off. At times, I would have to have a step ladder. Dangerous situation. If you've got a medium depth honey super, gross weight is about 65 pounds. Having that above my head became more and more dangerous the older I got. But that would be a typical two-queen colony. Three deeps and seven honey supers. Now, here in Colorado, average beekeeper, average year, the surplus would be about 75 pounds.
Yeah.
With a two-queen colony, I would expect a two-queen colony, when it was dialed in, to produce a surplus of between 240 and 260 pounds.
Wow.
The input was labor. You know, it didn't come free, but the return was you've effectively built up a very high field force population before you combine them. And among other things, that large brood population was able to capitalize on brief honey flows. So they not only would capitalize on the main honey flow, but they could also take advantage of short honey flows because you had so many fielders at any given time. As Kim said, he'd like to try it next year. I'm anxious to do a follow-on to this and see how he feels about it, because for For 25 years, I was one of the speakers in an 8-week beekeeping class that we did here. And every so often, one of the newer beekeepers would ask about the two queen system. I'd tell them what the particulars were. Usually 1 year was enough.
I can see why.
It took a lot of lifting, a lot of manipulating. You had to be a bull and a little bit stupid, but at the end of the season, the reward was a much larger honey crop, and that's what kept me in business. We're coming on to year number 46. I got a little information from a man by the name of Gerald Rose. I don't know if Kim ever heard his name or not, but Gerald was a leading beekeeper here in Colorado, and he was a double queen beekeeper. He was active in the 40s and the 50s, a little bit into the 60s. I got to know Gerald toward the end of his career. He retired and went to Eagle, Colorado, over on the western slope on the other side of the Continental Divide. And I was making a delivery to Aspen and stopped and talked to Gerald about some of the particulars about how he did the two queen system. What I found was I had probably perfected it better than Gerald, but he was one of the only two queen beekeepers that I was aware of in the country. And at this time, I don't know if there are any double queen beekeepers around the country or not, whether I was the only one or not. Not too many did that.
Hey, Tom, why would a beekeeper want to run a two queen system? What are the advantages?
There are several advantages to doing that, one of which is a very large honey crop. Another advantage is, as you come toward the end of the season, the queens sort out who's going to be the leader. And typically it's the top queen, the new queen, who prevails. So in the process of doing the double queening, you're also requeening. And I know that because occasionally I would get queens along with a shipment that was destined for hobbyist beekeepers who wanted their queens marked. I typically wouldn't have marked queens, but because I had marked queens by virtue of the hobbyists, I had a pretty good idea of which queen survived. And it was usually the young queen that survived. I never found it very rewarding to squish a queen after the second year to keep a young queen at the head of the colony. And that was one of the minor reasons why double queening appealed to me. Yeah. The queen sorted it out, and the young queen was usually the one that prevailed. Another advantage is, as the brood hatches out, you wind up in the fall with an enormous amount of pollen stored, which is good for the following spring when the queen begins to lay again. There's no pollen shortage. There's plenty of pollen for that queen to get going again. And that's another very definite advantage to double queening.
Did you find a preference or a difference in the race of bees? Do you prefer Italians or Caucasians or Carniolans?
You know, I have my own preferences. Mm-hmm. I settled on the Caucasians while they were still available, and I kept pretty meticulous production records for all the different types of bees that I ran. And about year 30, 35, I sat down and I analyzed what the production had been among all those queens. And what I found was there was not much difference at all. It didn't make any difference whether they were Caucasians or Carniolans or Italians. Italians have a real disadvantage here in Colorado, in my view, because The Italians are primarily a commercial bee, and they're very productive, prolific brood rearers. And what happens here in Colorado is they will continue raising brood far too long into the fall. And what happens is they wind up eating their winter stores and starve out, unless you're watching them very closely and feeding them supplemental feed. The Caucasians didn't do that. The Carniolans now, that are sort of a replacement for the Caucasians, will begin to shut down the brood rearing fairly early. You can't ignore their stores. You have to be on top of what their stores are. But their tendency is to begin to suspend brood rearing in September and October and carry a fairly small brood nest into December. The queen typically would stop laying in mid-September or mid-December here, but I think, if the truth be known, that queen is down in that hive, surrounded by all those overwintering bees, and probably carrying a little bit of brood through the winter. Some of them would stop completely, but I think some of them continued and didn't begin brood rearing again until about the third week in February, when the early trees begin to bloom.
All right, quick question here then, Tom. After you've harvesting all that honey, when you put that hive back together, how do you configure all of that?
Well, I don't do anything after I've pulled the supers. The bees sort it out themselves. So they're in three deeps. The queens determine which one is going to prevail. I typically wouldn't go into them in the fall. And so they just, you have a very high population of bees, a very productive three-story colony, lots of pollen, plenty of honey to carry them through the winter. And I wouldn't typically mess with them after I've pulled the honey.
So you've got a three-deep colony with a surviving queen and a lot of bees in it.
Yes.
Do you leave any extra supers for honey?
In the fall?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, the picture that I just mentioned of a view that we've got in ABC shows that configuration exactly the way you described it. So we'll put that on the show notes so that people can see what it looks like.
Uh-huh. I'm not sure how workable two-queen beekeeping is today for a number of reasons. I'm not sure that there's a sufficient crop in most areas to sustain a really strong colony or a whole yard of strong colonies. That's one of the drawbacks, the limitations of the crop. An even more important limitation, though, is the dependability of the queen. That system is based upon two queen system. And you're not going to take down seven supers to check on the queens to see whether you've got viable queens in both halves. And we cannot depend upon the viability of the queens over the course of a season. And I think that's a real limitation. Now, you design mechanical aids to lift those seven supers up and pull them away and check the queens, but I didn't have any of that. I was totally dependent upon those queens surviving and thriving, and I don't think we can depend on that today.
Well, you're talking about the changes and the queen viability. I was wondering how the varroa has impacted your two queen operation over the years.
The varroa showed up in Boulder County in 1995, and our losses, as they were over most of the country, were pretty substantial. Over the first two or three years, we began to come to terms with how to deal with the varroa. and got that in hand to a degree. And what we found was that even though we were controlling the varroa, the losses continued and even escalated. And looking back, I think what we were observing but didn't know was the introduction of the first of the neonicotinoid family of pesticides. Imidacloprid was the first, introduced in the United States in about 1994-95. And it was beginning to establish a larger and larger place in the market. But we weren't aware of the damages it was causing. And we do now. We have a much better understanding of the damages caused by the neonicotinoids. So we had a double whammy. We not only had the varroa mites, but we had the family of neonicotinoids. One of the more damaging was clothianidin, used primarily as a seed treatment on corn. Almost all the commercial corn is treated with clothianidin or imidacloprid, and it's a horrible situation. I've said many times that the environmental effect of the neonicotinoids is comparable to the toxic equivalent of about 400 billion pounds of DDT every year, on top of what's already in the soil and the groundwater from previous years. It's a horrible poisoning of the environment, and very few people have grasped that or choose to grasp that. If you use DDT as a reference point of one, the amount of neonicotinoids that are going into the environment, and I had to do the math several times because I thought, Tom, you've got a decimal place off here somewhere and you're going to look like a fool. Well, I'm going to have to look like a fool for other reasons, but not for that reason. The toxic equivalent of 400 billion pounds of neonicotinoids going into the soil and the groundwater every year. It's a wonder that there's anything alive out there. And we attribute most of the losses to the varroa mites, and I don't dismiss the varroa mites. You have to pay attention to the management of the varroa mites, but the life expectancy of a colony of bees has gone from several years, if you let them replace their own queen and they're in a hollow tree. But what we've done is we've turned a perennial into an annual. Life expectancy of a colony of bees here in Colorado is about 2 years.
Well, it doesn't sound like I'm going to be able to get to be a two-queen colony beekeeper then, Tom.
Well, I'd like you to try it. I'd like you to try it.
I like the stepladder idea. Not very much. I got to tell you that. I don't bounce like I used to when I fall anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm...
Yeah. It became more and more dangerous as the years went by.
I remember back when I was working USDA in Madison, we had the lead beekeeper at the bee lab there, Emmett Harp, was two queen. And
oh, really?
he had those skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin back then was like Colorado back when news first started. It was just one big honey crop. So he had lots and lots of honey, and he did it for the same reason you went after it. And I'm going to bet that Wisconsin's got the same problem now with queens and pesticides and not enough forage. I don't know, Jeff. Can you try it out in Oregon,
Washington, Olympia,
Washington, yeah. Not Oregon.
Yeah. Just a little bit. No, and I don't know of anybody who's trying it here.
I'd encourage you to at least give it a try, Kim, maybe worth two or three colonies, and see what your results are.
Well, I think I wanted to do this because I wanted to figure out again how to do it. And I got a guy with a truck that I may be able to get up on top of to get that top super off.
So I did have a question. When you combine, at the end of the season, you combine the two colonies. Do you just put them together, or do you use the same old newspaper method of combining the two colonies?
No newspaper. Mm-hmm. And you don't wait until the end of the season. You combine them just prior to the major honey flow.
Oh.
The objective is to produce this huge colony of fielders. And for us, that would be, shortly after the 4th of July, the second cutting of the alfalfa. Mm-hmm. And no, I would just see by now, all the smells have mingled. They've been able to, the workers can pass from top to bottom without any restriction other than a queen excluder. All the smells have mingled. So combining for me would consist of just taking off all those supers and then taking the third story, turning it so that the auger hole is to the front. And that's the extent of it. I use fairly liberally vanilla spray. Little bit of vanilla in a spray bottle helps to make that transition a little bit easier. It's good for a lot of reasons, and I always kept a spray bottle with vanilla water in my toolbox for a variety of reasons. But no newspaper method or any of that.
Well, you had asked, or Kim had asked, whether I had tried doing this, and I haven't, and Kim, you haven't. I'm curious if any of our listeners have tried this two-queen system and their experience. And on our new website that we'll be rolling out, they should be able to provide some feedback, both in as a voicemail and call in for us and leave a message of their experience, or even just email us at questions@beekeepingtodaypodcast.com, because this sounds like it would be an ideal honey production method if you're in the right area and you have and you want to experiment. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah.
Tom, when you were combining those colonies, you had an entrance on the bottom facing one direction. And then when you separated those colonies, you'd have another entrance for the top colony facing the other direction?
When I made the split, when I made a 2 or 3 frame split, that would be the third story, they would have an auger hole entrance to the rear.
Facing the other direction. Okay.
Yeah.
And that auger hole worked out all right.
It worked out all right as the top queen was building up. But at some point along the way, then I come in and the second story had 2 medium depth honey supers on top. And then the new queen, then 2 or 3 medium depth honey supers above her, with auger holes to the rear.
So more than one.
Yeah, as she built up the brood, they'd have more than one entrance.
Okay.
And the workers could pass through that whole column without fighting, without any competition. But that basically, that was the setup.
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering about how the entrances were working, but I can see it now. Yeah. Well, the biology makes perfect sense, and in terms of what's going on inside the box, unfortunately, it sounds like the biology outside of the box isn't working so well for us anymore.
That and the dependability of the queens, because the success of a two-queen system is the dependability of the queens, and I don't think that we can depend upon them anymore.
I know some of the people that raise their own have... I'm not going to say fixed that problem, but have certainly reduced that problem when you're controlling the local genetics and are able to produce your own queens. But when you're bringing them from someplace else, it can be a crapshoot sometimes. So I can see where that might be a real problem with queens not lasting long enough.
It can be a problem in a one queen system.
Yeah. Well, also it's the labor involved of taking off 7 supers to determine whether you've got viable queens in both halves. Now, that can be done, and certainly you could make some mechanical aid that would lift those up and turn them to the side or something like that. But if you're gonna determine whether you've got viable queens in both halves, you need to be able to get to them somehow.
Yeah,
and it involves a lot of lifting for someone like me.
And me.
And
yeah.
I think just about everybody.
Well, Tom, this is great. I think I got a handle on it now. I've got that picture of the hive the way you had it set up, and now I understand how you put it together. I might try it this year.
Yeah, give it a try. And I would, I as Jeff mentioned, I would be interested to see if there are any other beekeepers out there who are doing this or something similar, and how they're faring under the current conditions.
Well, if we get some questions, can we get you to answer them? If we can't,
of course, yes.
Okay, all right.
Do we have Tom? I was going to ask you if you had. Did you write this up at any time? Is this the Toon Queen system? Do you ever write this up for Kim and Bee Culture or any of the other beekeeping publications?
I don't think Kim encouraged me to write it up for years, and I always managed to avoid that. So this is the write-up.
Well, I'm honored.
I've been trying for 10 years, Jeff, to get him to tell us how to do this. So we finally roped him into it doing this, which is good. I appreciate your time. Well, did we miss anything, Tom?
I don't think so. I think we've pretty well covered it. For a smaller operation like mine, I considered myself a community beekeeper. I operated within about a 15-mile radius of home. And it was basically a honey production operation. At the peak, I probably harvested 3 to 4 tons of high-quality honey using the Two Queen system. It's like going out every day, and you got this pile of bales of hay. You got 200 bales in a pile. You dress up like an Eskimo. You go out there in the 90-degree heat, and bale by bale, you move that pile from one place to another. And it was a lot of lifting. And I was physically fit at the time. I couldn't begin to do what is required of it today.
Yep.
So
you're talking me out of it here, Tom.
Well, you need a young assistant or two.
I'll see what I can do. I know some young people with a truck. That's what I need here,
Jeff.
There
you go.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be, hopefully someone, one of our listeners will call in or write us and let us know what they're doing. If they've experimented with it, their stories, their success or failures.
Or not.
Yeah, or not. I mean, we all learn from our failures. I've learned a lot in my life. So, no, it's been great, Tom, having you on talking to us about the Two Queen system.
Yeah, Tom, thanks. I appreciate your time. We appreciate your time. Take care of yourself, and once we get some questions, we'll be back in touch.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see if you get any feedback.
All right. Take it easy, guy.
Take care, Tom.
Okay.
I really enjoyed listening to Tom. He is a wealth of information, and while I knew of him and enjoyed his columns in the little town's newspaper each week when I lived in Berthoud, and I met him at a couple beekeeping meetings there. I didn't spend any time with him, and I really wished I had and learned this two-queen system of producing honey.
Yeah, 250 pounds per colony. I'm tired just talking about it. I can't imagine moving that much honey from one pile of boxes. But he did it for a lot of years. He was real successful. And I'll tell you, the other thing that we didn't talk about that he does is he makes beautiful candles. And he has a lot of wax with that much honey, but he's got his own honey house, and he makes candles all winter, or made candles all winter, and kept bees all summer. He did a great job. I was with him one time and out in one of those bee yards, and I'm looking at a stack of boxes taller than me.
That would have been something, and it was. I enjoyed keeping bees there in that area of Colorado, and they made it fun to do because there was so much forage for them. A perfect place, I think, for the two queen system. I think the only time, well, in my immediate area, I don't think a two queen system would work. We just don't have the flow here. But I'm sure there are areas around here that where the fireweed is, and there are other great nectar sources where it would be really good to have a very strong colony like a two queen system would produce.
Yeah, we got our flow would, the timing of the flow here in Northeast Ohio would probably work with that, but I think the amount of the flow wouldn't. Mm. It comes on right about the right time as both of those populations have reached a peak, but you know, corn and soybeans. That's all we got here, just about. So it's not going to be great. But there are places, like you said, where you were, I think probably, you know, down the southeast part of the U.S. and certainly out in the Dakotas.
Oh, yeah. Well, even Western Ohio, out in the flat areas of Western Ohio, where there's
a lot
of lime in the soil that would be really good, I think, if it's not all plowed under.
Yeah. Well, for now, I'm just going to not climb ladders and keep bees.
Sounds like the safe way to go. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of Beekeeping Today podcast. Before we go, I want to encourage our listeners to rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and stream the show. Your vote helps other beekeepers find us quicker. Even better, write a review and let other beekeepers looking for a new podcast know what you like. As always, we thank Bee Culture, the magazine for American beekeeping, for their continued support of Beekeeping Today podcast. We want to thank our regular episode sponsor, Global Patties. Check them out at www.globalpatties.com. We also want to thank Strong Microbials for becoming the latest supporter of the podcast. Check out their probiotic line at www.strongmicrobials.com. And finally, we want to thank you, the Beekeeping Today podcast listener, for joining us on this show. Feel free to send us questions and comments at questions@beekeepingtodaypodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Anything else, Kim?
Well, I was just going to say, where is that web page where folks can pick up the Honeybee Obscura podcast with Kim and Jim?
That is at www.honeybeeobscura.com, and look for links at the bottom of this show notes.
All right. Good. Take it easy, Jeff.
Take care, Kim. Bye-bye.